First time, stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting some Florida residents began returning to their homes after Hurricane Irma. Officials warned the recovery would be frustrating and lengthy. Irma has left more than 6 million Florida homes without power, and the Keys have been described as a war zone. The storm has caused at least 40 deaths. The White House says Mr. Trump is planning to visit Florida Thursday. French President Emmanuel Macron promised a fast, exemplary reconstruction of the Caribbean islands of St. Martin and St. Bartholomew. Both islands were struck by Hurricane Irma. Scott Davis has more.
Macron promising a large-scale rebuild in the battered islands and says a return to normal life is the priority. According to a provisional tally, Irma killed 10 people on the French-speaking St. Bartholomew and in the French part of St. Martin.
Relief efforts for the region have stepped up since Sunday, with France and the Netherlands sending in military units. They are giving food and water to residents, and they're also helping them clear the damaged homes and streets. U.S. President Donald Trump Tuesday called new United Nations sanctions on North Korea just another very small step.
It was nice to get a 15-0 vote, but those sanctions are nothing compared to what ultimately will have to happen.
North Korea has strongly criticized the U.N. Security Council's decision to impose tough new sanctions on them. The new sanctions against Pyongyang will impose a ban on the country's textile exports and would also cap imports of crude oil. More at VOAnews.com. This is VOA News. Apple has rolled out its much-anticipated iPhone X. The phone features wireless charging, an infrared camera, and special hardware for facial recognition, which replaces fingerprint recognition. The home button found on previous iPhones is now gone, and users will tap the phone to wake it up. Phone ships on November 3rd and is priced at $999. But it's not the only mobile device making news, as Ryan Brooks explains.
Early signs that Samsung's next Galaxy Note is rising from the ashes. Company execs on Tuesday saying pre-orders for the Note 8 have hit over 650,000 in just 5 days, proving that even after the disastrous recall of exploding Note 7s last year, the Samsung name still commands a loyal legion. One critical market Samsung's keeping an eye on is the world's biggest for smartphones, China. The Note 8 faces an uphill battle there, with cutthroat competition from the likes of Xiaomi and Huawei, costing Samsung a 3% market share in just 3 months from April to June.
And the Note 8 officially goes on sale this Friday. Venezuelan authorities say gunmen assaulted an army patrol in an eastern area where illegal mining has become increasingly common. Laura Sega has the details.
Authorities say 11 of the attackers were killed and one soldier was wounded in the gun battle. Officials said that the soldiers were patrolling in a remote part of Bolivar province when they were ambushed Sunday.
Authorities say 11 of the attackers were killed. One soldier was wounded in the gun battle. Officials also said the soldiers were patrolling in a remote part of Bolivar province when they were ambushed. Lawmakers say that the opposition-controlled National Assembly is opening an inquiry. He says the men killed included illegal mine workers. 17 miners were killed by a paramilitary group last year at a mine near the site of Sunday's clash. Venezuela's government and opposition say they will send delegates to explore the possibility of resuming talks in response to an invitation from the Dominican Republic. The former Spanish prime minister and a Dominican foreign minister sent an invitation Tuesday encouraging Venezuelan government and opposition leaders to participate in a new round of dialogue aimed at ending the nation's upheaval. And Brazil's top court has authorized a new corruption and money laundering investigation of President Michel Temer Tuesday. The Supreme Court justice ruled there is sufficient evidence to investigate whether he signed a decree in May 2017 to favor a company operating in the port of Santos in exchange for bribes. His lawyers could not be located for comment on that decision. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, and today is Wednesday, September the 13th, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you. Lawmakers with Uganda's ruling party on Tuesday backed plans to remove the presidential age limit, which would allow longtime President Yoweri Museveni to extend his rule. And Gambia's new leader, President Adama Barrow, launched a security sector reform, an initiative that would see him take more control of the country's military.
Key objectives include the development of an inclusive national security strategy for the Gambia and the implementation of a coherent and coordinated framework of support for the implementation of the SSR intervention.
Gambian President Adama Barrow. And the United States will stop issuing certain visas to Eritrean nationals and Guinean officials as of today, Wednesday. And Burundi's capital, Bujumbura, four people were shot dead by an unknown armed group.
Les enquêtes sont en cours. Et ceux qui ont
investigations have already started, and those who carry those people will be punished by the law because they are criminals.
Moise Nkurunziza is Burundi's deputy spokesman. And South Africa's President Jacob Zuma suffered a setback on Tuesday when a court ruled that the election of a faction loyal to him in his home province 2 years ago was invalid. Those stories and more are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. The United States will stop issuing certain visas to Eritrean nationals and Guinean officials as of today. The embassies in those countries announced Tuesday that the new restrictions are aimed at four Asian and African nations that have refused to take back citizens who have been deported. Under federal law, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson can stop all or specific types of visas from being issued to such nations. And lawmakers with Uganda's ruling party on Tuesday backed plans to remove the presidential age limit that would allow longtime President Yoweri Museveni to extend his rule. The ruling party caucus decided to throw out a clause that puts the upper age limit at 75. Museveni, who is 73 and ineligible to run again if the age limit remains, has recently ducked the question when asked whether he wants more time in office, insisting that the matter is not so important. Museveni's party has an overwhelming majority in the National Assembly, and a bill to remove the age limit is expected to pass when the procedural process starts. Four people were shot dead by an unknown armed group in Burundi's capital, Bujumbura. Families of the deceased are calling on the government to bring perpetrators to justice. Moses Havyarimana has the story.
It was around 22 hours local time in Bujumbura when unknown armed men opened fire on a group of eight people who were brewing an illicit local beer in a Bujumbura neighborhood. According to the Burundi authority, four people died on spot, and two others were rushed to the hospital after sustaining injuries. One of the relatives of the deceased explains.
I rushed saw them yesterday in afternoon at PM. I had come to visit her from countryside because I'm in holiday. So what happened? I just hear that they were killed and the body was brought here at home in the morning. I'm now thinking on how to take the orphans in countryside because their mom is gone.
Residents in Kinama, a neighborhood in Bujumbura, have expressed their fears and concerns on how the four people were killed over the night. The residents call on the government to bring the perpetrators to justice.
Those people who was contacted that attack should be looked for, and a quick investigation should be done, and the perpetrators should be brought to justice. They were good citizens, we know them, and they have never committed any crime.
Dozens of people were killed in the last 3 months in the country, with grenade attacks and bodies being found on the streets or rivers. The Burundi police says that none of the attacks which have been happening recently was politically motivated. The Burundi deputy police spokesman, Moise Nkurunziza, said that the investigations have been launched.
Les enquêtes sont en cours, et ceux qui ont
Investigations have already started, and those who killed those people will be punished by the law because they are criminals. You know what we had always made cordon and searching in the neighborhood, and those who had been selling those illicit alcohol have been arrested and fined.
Three people, including a landlord of one of the people killed, have been arrested for further investigations. Since 2015, when the incumbent president Pierre Nkurunziza vied for a third term in the office, more than 500 people have been killed and hundreds of thousands fled to the neighboring countries. The country is said to have steadily gained stability as repatriation of refugees by the Burundi government and the UNHCR already started. The operation, by the end of this year, will accomplish the return of more than 12,000 Burundians back to the country from Tanzania. Moses Habyarimana, Voice of America.
A new report out by Oceana looks into the depth of overfishing in West African waters, especially by EU-flagged vessels. According to the report, West African waters are home to the highest levels of illegal fishing, and policies to protect the waters are being undermined. One of the report's co-authors, Lesi Malaki, talks to Ricky Shryok about the impact this is having on the region.
Four EU countries, which included Greece, Italy, Portugal, and Spain, authorized 19 vessels to fish in the Gambia and Equatorial Guinea under private agreements, which violated EU law. These countries violated the law since their vessels were fishing under these private agreements in the waters of African countries where they were not supposed to operate due to this dormant fishing agreement that was in place. The private agreements were issued by both the flag state and the coastal state to allow individual vessels access to the coastal state's waters. So a provision in the EU law under the Common Fisheries Policy states that when there is a dormant fisheries agreement in place between the EU and a coastal state, EU flagged vessels are not allowed to fish in those waters, including under private agreements. So no EU country has the legal authority to issue a permit to an EU flagged vessel to fish in the waters of the Gambia, which has had a dormant fisheries agreement since 1996, or Equatorial Guinea.
Now, were these countries punished in any way or fined?
The Spanish government informed us that they did ask the one remaining Spanish vessel that was there in 2015 to leave after they received notification from the European Council of this existing dormant fisheries partnership agreement. The Portuguese and Italian governments responded to our request for additional information by saying that they are investigating the fishing activity of their vessels in the Gambia and are in contact with the European Commission. The Greek government has not yet replied to our request.
There are dormant policies in the Gambia and Equatorial Guinea, which would mean that no EU vessel should be allowed to fish in these waters. But they are fishing because the governments themselves, the European governments, are giving them the okay, or the African governments?
Correct. Actually, both the European governments authorized private agreements and the African coastal states granted private agreements as well to some of these vessels.
What are the real-life impacts that these breaches of international fishing laws have on local populations?
Well, West African coastal states are particularly vulnerable to illegal fishing, which accounts for an estimated 40% of all fish caught in the region. Now, fisheries are one of the pillars of the Gambia's food security.
How does the new European legal framework that was agreed upon in June 2017 aim to standardize the fishing activities of all EU-flagged vessels with equal oversight?
It will require equal oversight of all vessels, regardless of where they operate. The law's success will, though, depend on strong commitment from member states as well as the European Commission. But if the new law is enforced properly, any fishing activity that falls outside of EU law, like the activity described in this report, should stop.
That was Lacey Malaki, a co-author on Oceana's report and illegal fishing analyst. She was speaking to Ricky Shryok from Washington. And still in West Africa, Ricky Shryok brings us a story about Madibe Nature, a small conservation organization in Cameroon that is building boats out of plastic bottles. They hope actions like this can change local attitudes about West and plastic in general. President of the group, Ismail Esome, talked to Ricky Shryok about their efforts in conservation and creation of the EcoBot.
Classically, I wanted to valorize those bottles, and I didn't know in what. But I know that we built a floating platform with big containers. So I thought that if I can join those bottles together, I can do something floating platform, and it can be useful. Why not a boat? I tied those bottles, and I have a foam, and I tried to make it like a boat. I performed the boat from the beginning to the end. Now we have six eco boats. Every sample is different.
So you have six eco boats. Are people using them, and who is using them?
Okay, we have six eco boats yet, and the eco boat is used from ecotourism. One is used from ecotourism in Lycosa, and two others are used in traditional fishing, a sample, a test, in the Kamo River in Yabasi. And we have now three in the Longi Beach, where we use it for promote ecotourism.
What do you hope the future holds for eco boats?
What I hope for the future of eco boat is I want to convince a lot of fishers to use it as a sustainable boat for fishing activities. So now I'm testing this with them. I want them to be in confidence with that. So we can sell or give this for traditional fishing activity here in Cameroon. In the lake, we have so many lakes and rivers. And traditional fishing in the sea. We have more than 250,000 of fishermen in Cameroon. So this has a lot of pressure on the deforestation. So I want my eco boat to be more safety strong, so I can convince all the fishers to use it for fishing activities. And secondly, I want to promote this ecotourism. We call it Madiba Nature tropical ecotourism. We use it at surf in Kribi Beach, Longi Beach. And from October, we start a very big promotion of ecotourism with many eco boats on all the beaches of the town. So we want people to use it there for make a trip around the beach or in the sea. And in many swimming pools, you know, many hotels have a pool here, swimming pool, so we can use those for floating for leisure parties. It's our present hope for eco boat.
That was Ismail Esome, president of Madiebe Nature. He was speaking to Ricky Shryok from Douala, Cameroon. Gambia's new leader, President Adama Barrow, launched the Gambian government's security sector reform, an initiative that would see him take a greater control of the military. From Banjul, Seine Marena has this report.
The security sector reform seeks to build better relations between the army and citizens, to restore confidence and trust in the defense force. Former President Yahya Jammeh used the military to strengthen his oppressive grip on power, instill fear and commit human rights abuses. Since his departure, over 20 soldiers were arrested for various crimes. In his speech, President Barrow said the reforms were initiated to ensure an effective and accountable security sector that has respect for human rights, the rule of law, and fundamental principles of good governance.
The key objectives include the development of an inclusive national security strategy for the Gambia and the implementation of a coherent and coordinated framework of support for the implementation of the SSR intervention.
Interior Minister Mai Ahmed Fadi said President Barrow had set the tune for the future of the security sector when he launched the National Security Council.
No structured policy on security. The only policy in place was one that was intended to entrench a dictatorship based on the principle of fear and the exercise of the rule of fear. That is why, Your Excellency, today is a milestone. It is a milestone because our government, under your able leadership and guidance, seeks to comprehensively eliminate the reckless distortions that bedeviled security sector governance for more than two decades. Today, we seek to restore the balance and resolve long-term challenges in the security sector.
Minister Fati stressed that the reform process would lead to the emergence of a professional, ethical, and competent security sector. ECOWAS ambassador to Gambia, Vaban Gayflo, said ECOWAS was proud of President Barrow and the efforts of his administration in the restoration of democracy in the Gambia.
Today marks a very important milestone in the restoration of the democratic process in the Gambia, starting with the security sector, which is a key component in governance. Following the history of the Gambia for the past 22 years, one would have expected that the Gambia would have been institutionalized with all governmental bodies working properly and in line with internationally accepted best practices and norms. Unfortunately, this was not the case.
United Nations Secretary General Special Representative Dr. Mohamed Ibn Chambers commended the government's initiative to embark on this important political process and renew the UN commitment to support this endeavor along with other partners.
By embarking on a comprehensive reform of its security sector, the government of the Gambia has made the choice of strengthening justice and security institutions to render them accessible and responsive to the needs and rights of all women, men, girls, boys, the entire Gambian population.
EU Ambassador Attila Lajos said security sector reform in the Gambia faced deep-seated challenges after 22 years of a repressive regime.
The reform of the security sector is therefore a key priority to stabilizing democracy in country and Gambia becoming a human rights champion.
The new National Security Advisor, retired Colonel Momodou Badji, said a well-organized security sector is important for economic development and democratic growth. He noted the challenges in the security sector and called on stakeholders to focus on institutional and organizational reforms. Supported by the United Nations and other partners, the Security Sector Reform Project is an initiative by Barrow administration to transform the country's security sector into institutions that are effective, professional, and accountable to the state and the people of the Gambia. Reporting for VOA News in Banjul, I am Seni M.K. Marina.
Regional police officers from East and Central Africa are meeting in Ugandan capital Kampala to devise ways and how to combat crime rates among member states. Uganda Police Assistant Inspector of Police Fred Yiga, who leads the Interpol and Peace Support Operation in Uganda, tells VOA that regional police will come up with a database for known criminals in a bid to fight inter-country crimes. Reporter Mugume Davis Rwakarinji files this report from Kampala.
Yiga says regional police has identified a series of continued cross-country and cross-continent crimes.
For example, just vehicle thefts alone, vehicles have been stolen from Europe into Africa, from Africa into Europe. Drug trafficking has happened between across continents. Human trafficking has happened across continents.
He says by coming together, police will be able to easily share information and arrest criminals who usually hide away from countries that have committed crimes.
It makes no sense someone committing crime in Senegal and running to Uganda, and Uganda cannot cross those borders to get into Senegal to address this crime. By doing the AFRIPO thing, we are saying we are going to reduce on the high doubts of criminals. You know, we are going to put in place good mechanisms that are going to address each other across our different boundaries, rather than remaining in our regional cocoons.
Police officers will spend a full week discussing those mechanisms. Yiga says they won't leave any stone unturned in the fight against crimes. He says members of regional police will meet from time to time to share information.
We have to make it known that when you report crime to Nation X, they must, you know, act fast in order for us to be able to intercept culprits. So, and it is important for us to get into the habit of updating our records, the databases.
Other crimes the regional Interpol intends to fight include cyber crimes, counterfeits and illegal arms. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
The UN Refugee Agency reports that more than 3.5 million refugee children aged 5 to 17 did not attend school last year to the detriment of their future and the future well-being of society. Lisa Schlein has more.
Children make up half of the 17.2 million refugees around the world, and many of them are missing out on a productive future because they do not go to school. The UN Refugee Agency warns neglecting the education of millions of refugee children will undermine the UN's Sustainable Development Goals, principally those targeting health, prosperity, equality, and peace. The UNHCR reports 91% of the world's children attend primary school, compared to 61% for refugee children. It says that number drops to below 50% for refugee children in poor countries. The agency finds those numbers drop precipitously as refugee children age, especially in the poorer countries. It says far fewer adolescents attend secondary school and enrollment in university is stuck at 1%. UNHCR spokeswoman Cecile Puyi tells VOA denying refugee children access to an education is short-sighted.
There is a clear need for more solidarity and for making sure that people who take refuge in low-income countries also have access to education. This is crucial. We know that these refugee children will one day go back to their home places and rebuild their countries, so they are the future. If we don't invest in their future, we don't invest in the world's future.
The UNHCR urges governments to include refugee children in their national education systems. It also calls for more efforts to ensure refugee children are taught by properly trained and qualified teachers. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And in South Africa, the President Jacob Zuma suffered a setback on Tuesday when a court ruled that the election of a faction loyal to him in his home province 2 years ago was invalid. The KwaZulu-Natal province, situated on the east coast of South Africa, is the ancestral home of the embattled president and will also command most votes at the ANC's national conference in December. That is when President Jacob Zuma plans to step down as the party chief. Zuma's loyalists took control of the province in November 2015 at a party conference after ousting former Premier Senzo Mchunu. But he filed a court case against his removal, citing procedural irregularities, an appeal upheld by Tuesday's court ruling. The High Court ruling highlights growing rifts within Zuma's ruling African National Congress, ANC, and could hamper his efforts to ensure his ex-wife, Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, to replace him as party leader and eventually as president. And that's it for this Wednesday, September the 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryok, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you all a very good day, Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, fresh off a three-nation Africa visit to the Democratic Republic of Congo, Zambia, and Tanzania, Shaka Sali talks about the fascinating people he met and the challenges he encountered, reporting on democracy in Africa. On the road with Shaka on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com. The news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.